Hello, I'm Angela, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 30th of April 2025.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Angela, Christine, Ian, Helen, Mohammed, Mina, Simon, and of course, not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Mohammed. We have all the latest news and information from the Black Country. There's all the reaction to the weekend's football action for Wolves and West Brom. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. You'll have to be sharp of mind as we have another quiz. Local news to start, though, with me, Angela, Ian and Christine. A series of changes to bus timetables across the Black Country came into effect over the weekend. Transport for West Midlands, TFWM, said it regularly works with operators of bus services to make improvements for passengers, and these alterations were part of that. The changes to a number of services in the Black Country were put into force on Sunday, April the 27th, and people are urged to check their journeys before travelling to get the most up-to-date information. The TFWM website said, "In addition to our yearly bus networks reviews, we are constantly working with operators to monitor services and make improvements where we can. To increase the efficiency of the network, bus operators may make minor changes to their services throughout the year. We work to update our online timetables, journey planner and at-stop information before the change date. However, this is not always possible. Please check your journey before you travel to ensure you have the most up-to-date information." In the Black Country, the following services have seen alterations from last Sunday. Service 1, Technor Wood to Dudley via Wolverhampton. This service will operate on a 10-minute weekday frequency. Service 5, West Bromwich to Sutton Coalfield via Oscott. Monday to Saturday daytime frequency reduced to every 12 minutes. Additional journeys will operate from Sutton between 15:15 and 15:45 and arrivals into Sutton between 8 and 8:45 a.m. to support school's capacity. Service 6, Dudley to Stourbridge via Russell Hill Hospital. Monday to Saturday daytime frequency reduced to every 12 minutes. Service 126, Birmingham to Dudley via Bearwood. Weekday to daytime frequencies reduced to every 20 minutes. Services will be timed to coordinate with services X8 and X10 to provide a combined frequency of every 6-6-8 minutes between Birmingham and Quinton, 8-12 minutes on X8 and X10 specifically. Service X10, Birmingham to Gornal Wood via Hales Owen, Maryhill. This service will be operating at a reduced frequency. A basic 20-minute frequency will remain in place Monday to Saturday during the day. Some other services will undergo minor timetable changes and full details are available at www.tfwm.org.uk.
Now then, some of us may use the number 1 bus service to hop into Wolverhampton city centre and may also be aware of some recent reinstatement work that has been completed to a paved area within the city centre. Well, one senior councillor, Simon Bennett, leader of the city's opposition Conservative group, has lambasted the shambolic state of reinstatement and said he was appalled by the standard of workmanship after Victoria Street was dug up for essential maintenance work. He said the poorly laid slabs did little for the appearance of the city at a time when £19 million was being spent on a pavement-focused regeneration scheme to make the area more attractive to visitors. Victoria Street itself was repaved just over 2 years ago as part of a separate £15.7 million pedestrianisation scheme in the city. However, the cabinet member in charge of public works in the city, Councillor Chris Burden, said the latest work in Victoria Street had been carried out by National Grid and not the council. He said the company would be instructed to return and do the work again. Councillor Bennett said the state of the workmanship in Victoria Street was simply not good enough. It's been left in a shambolic state after a very expensive project of pedestrianisation was completed by the council not so long ago, he said. It's clever the contractors responsible for this project have not delivered the standard of work the public expects or deserves. It's vital that the council steps in to hold them to account and gets them back to return the surface to the standard it had been laid in. Taxpayers footed the bill for this scheme through grant funding from the last Conservative government, and they have every right to demand better. He said Victoria Street was at the heart of a regeneration scheme that was supposed to revitalise the city centre. What we've ended up with is second-rate workmanship, damaging the previously completed work, and is already drawing criticism from residents and traders alike, he added. Councillor Bennett said council leaders had claimed the long-delayed pedestrianisation of Victoria Street would enable businesses to thrive and grow. Councillor Simpkins said the work that had been carried out in Victoria Street was nothing to do with the regeneration projects that were taking place in the city. Councillor Chris Burden, who is cabinet member for city development, said a small number of slabs had to be removed by National Grid to fix a fault following a power cut in the Manda Centre. National Grid reinstated the paving and will be returning to finish the job, he said. We will ensure they complete the work to the same high standard as the original scheme. This is nothing to do with the original transformation scheme that was successfully delivered and has already attracted new investment in the city, including the imminent opening of a new bowling and gaming venue on Victoria Street, boosting the leisure offer for city residents and creating jobs. When the necessary remedial works have been completed by National Grid Electricity Distribution, a council street works engineer will inspect the site to ensure the reinstatement meets the required standard. Staying on the roads, and taxi drivers and passengers will soon be able to record audio in South Staffordshire cabs by pressing a panic switch under new measures to improve safety. The local authority is set to allow CCTV with audio recording to be installed in cabs following a consultation with taxi drivers and users last year. It follows a number of assaults on drivers in recent years. South Staffordshire Council's licensing committee were recently asked to approve the CCTV policy permitting audio recording in taxis. Consultation on the plans received 1,329 responses, with a report stating that 88% of respondents agreed audio recording would better protect passengers from drivers and 96% agreeing it would better protect drivers. A report to the committee said there had been several high-profile assaults on licensed drivers, the Local Democracy Reporting Service said, LDRS. Given the risk to the council's drivers, the position on audio recording and its crime deterrent benefits has been reviewed to provide greater protection to drivers from this type of attack, the report said. Greg Bickerdike, licensing manager at City of Wolverhampton Council, which runs taxi licensing services on behalf of the district authority, said it was not a mandatory requirement but would allow drivers to install the audio equipment. For the protection of them and passengers' privacy, there will be a switch the driver or passenger can turn on at any time, he explained. It's not just a one-way thing. It has to be accessible to both taxi passengers and drivers.
Staying on our roads, and to a rather fortunate and unfortunate series of events, as a man who bought a £20,000 car to replace the one he had stolen has discovered he has accidentally bought back his own stolen car. Mr. Valentine woke up to find his car, a black Honda Civic, had disappeared from his drive overnight. After informing police and his insurers, he started looking for a replacement 2016 Type R model and found one that looked identical about 70 miles away. But after he bought it, he noticed similar items in the vehicle. It was then Mr. Valentine realised he had bought his stolen car. He also found his previous addresses in the car's sat-nav. He told the BBC he was gutted when his car was stolen and he was determined to replace it with the same model. It was sort of a midlife crisis car, and you don't get many of those, so I was pretty determined to get it replaced before one day I have to get a sort of family car, he said. I spotted one that was identical, same colour, same year, same slightly obnoxious exhaust system on it as well, he explained. It fit the bill precisely. Mr. Valentine paid £20,000 for the replacement car at a reputable garage, but upon driving it home, he started to get suspicious. I started noticing things in the car were a little bit odd, like a single tent peg and some Christmas tree pines and some, like, Mars bar wrappers and things that they hadn't cleaned out, he said. All very similar to what you could have found in my stolen car. Despite the car having a new number plate and a lower mileage, Mr. Valentine's suspicions were confirmed when he later discovered his parents' addresses in the history of the built-in navigation system. I nearly crashed, to be honest, because I was in shock. My hands were shaking, my heart was pounding, he said. A part of me felt sort of triumphant for a moment until I realised, actually, no, this isn't some heroic moment. You didn't go and get your car back. You'd actually done something a bit stupid. He took the vehicle to a Honda garage in Solihull and informed the police, who he said could not believe he had bought his own car and suspected it was stolen to order by unidentified thieves. The first Honda technician pulled out the physical key of the original smart key, puts it straight in the door and unlocks it, and he's like, "Yes, it's your car," Mr. Valentine said. You could see signs where they tampered with things and removed VIN numbers and replaced other ones and things. Mr. Valentine said he believed the garage he bought the car from was also duped, and he now hoped to get his money and deposit back for the vehicle. The police and the Honda garage all said this was one of the best clone jobs they'd ever seen. So if it wasn't for these little artifacts, no one would have ever known. Now then. Pavement parking regularly causes problems for visually impaired pedestrians and those who use wheelchairs or suffer from mobility problems. However, each county in the UK is tackling the legislation regarding pavement parking differently, so it is all rather confusing and dependent on where you live. More clarity is needed, as this article from Soundings contributors Fiona and Amanda makes clear.
The United Kingdom appears to have become divided over how to legislate around vehicles parking on pavements. It seems legislation introduced to make pavements safer for pedestrians, those with mobility difficulties, and people with visual impairments and other disabilities, has thrown local authorities into a tizzy. Each country in the UK is tackling the legislation differently, and it is all rather confusing and dependent on where you live. Charities supporting people with visual impairment have spoken out about the issue. The Royal National Institute of Blind People, the RNIB, advocates for clear pavements, saying on their website, "Clear pavements are essential for blind and partially sighted people. However, most report parking on pavements as a regular problem, which impacts their ability to get around." Guide Dogs Charity's Streets Ahead campaign highlights that 4 out of 5 blind or partially sighted people said that pavement parking makes it difficult for them to walk on the pavement at least once a week. Pavement parking is consistently highlighted as one of the key challenges people with sight loss face, with 81% of people with sight loss saying that reducing obstacles on pavements and street clutter was important to improving their quality of life. There's also a financial cost too. Pavements aren't designed to take the weight of vehicles, and inconsiderate parking can contribute to the repairs required on our footways. Now, some statistics. There are 382 local authorities in the UK, 317 in England, 22 in Wales, 32 in Scotland, and 11 in Northern Ireland. According to Transport Scotland figures, only 8 of Scotland's 32 local authorities have started enforcement since Scottish Government legislation came into force on December the 11th last year. Drivers can now also be fined for double parking and parking across dropped curbs at crossings, with the penalty halved if paid within 14 days. Fines income is ring-fenced for spending by councils on transport. In Wales, Living Streets Cymru are campaigning to have the Welsh Government introduce legislation to give all local authorities the power to enforce against parking on pavements where it is causing an unnecessary obstruction to pedestrians. Currently, this power is held by the police, who don't enforce against parking on the pavement. Guidelines will be issued to local authorities setting out exactly what this means. Living Streets Cymru are working with Welsh Government officials on the rollout plans. Previously, Living Streets campaigning saw Wales become the first UK nation to set a default speed limit of 20 miles per hour in residential areas. In Northern Ireland in 2023, the Department for Infrastructure introduced a ban on pavement parking in some specific locations, such as footpaths beside bus or cycle lanes, saying that inconsiderate pavement parking is an ongoing issue across Northern Ireland. London is currently the only area in England where pavement parking is banned, and a recent report by the Local Government Association urges the government to extend the ban to the rest of the country. Let's invite the RAC to step in to provide some clarity on where you can or cannot park. Their website explains that currently, the Highway Code states that you must not park partially or wholly on the pavement in London and Edinburgh, and should not do elsewhere unless signs permit it. In other words, offenders in London and Edinburgh are committing a punishable offence and are liable to receive a parking ticket. Elsewhere, drivers aren't necessarily committing an offence, but it is an offence to drive on the pavement. This means the law is a little fuzzy, as outlined by the Ask the Police website. It says, despite the obvious inference that a parked vehicle has been driven on the pavement prior to being parked there, witnesses to the driving will probably be needed to secure a prosecution. This can be problematic. Finally, the RAC suggest, if there are restrictions, or your parking would cause wheelchair users or people with prams to have to walk into the road, then you should find somewhere else to park. Now that is clear guidance.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Beacon Update. My name's Mohammed, and I've got the latest for you from across the charity. First up, we have Take on a Challenge and Support Beacon. Ready for an adventure? We've launched a brand new webpage full of exciting challenge events. Whether you're a runner, a walker, or an all-out adventurer, there's something there for everyone. Take part, have fun, and raise vital funds to help Beacon support people living with sight loss. You can find our new webpage at www.beaconvision.org/challenge-events. Next up, grab your tickets for the Beacon Family Colour Fun Run, happening on Sunday the 11th of May 2025 at East Park in Wolverhampton. Tickets are now available, and we also have some bundle options which you might be interested in. The bundle options include: snag an official t-shirt from the event to really look the part, add some colourful extras to make your day even brighter, perfect for families who want the full colour run experience. Whether you're running, walking, or cha-cha sliding around the course, bundle up and make it a day to remember. Get your tickets at www.beaconvision.org/colour-run. That's it for this week's Beacon Update. Join us again next week, where we'll have more from everything that's going on at Beacon.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news, and up first, we hear from Christine.
The future of healthcare in Sedgley is unclear as pressure mounts on Dudley Council to take decisive action. The lease for the purpose-built Ladies Walk Health Centre and Library expires in March 2026, and no deal has been done to secure its continued use. The uncertainty is causing concern for people, fearing it will be closed for redevelopment, which has led to calls for drastic action. Sedgley councillor Sean Keesey said, "It seems ridiculous to me that a purpose-built facility, ultimately funded by taxpayers, could be at risk of closure after just 25 years. We are a large metropolitan council and we need to use that strength to protect Ladies Walk Health Centre and Library. If the landlord won't play ball, we must look seriously at using compulsory purchase powers to safeguard this site." Dudley MP Sonia Kumar is also worried and says she has written to the owner of the site twice but is yet to get a reply. Dudley Council says it is in talks with the owner's agent but could not give any commitment that services will stay at the site. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of the council, said, "Along with our healthcare partners, we are committed to doing all we can to maintain library and health services in Sedgley. We are exploring three options and would prefer for the facilities to remain at Ladies Walk. Failing that, we will be looking to secure a building in Sedgley for the library to move to. We will continue talking to our health partners about the possibility of co-location and cooperation to this end." Meanwhile, a campaign demanding action is gathering pace. Ms. Kumar is running an online petition which has already attracted more than 500 signatures. The MP is also holding a day of action in Sedgley on Saturday, May the 3rd, starting at 12:30 p.m. at the library. Ms. Kumar said, "This service is vital. My concern is NHS services would be lost in Sedgley. The place could not be relocated anywhere else. To build another building like this will take too long and it is just not going to happen. Relocation is just not a viable option." The former NHS physiotherapist turned politician added, "Removal of health services, forcing people to travel further, would put a barrier in the way and possibly stop them from accessing vital treatment." Ms. Kumar said, "It really is the heart of Sedgley. Do I think the council should purchase it? Yes. How they do that, I would leave up to them." Councillor Harley said, "We do not have any definitive answers or timescales at the moment, but can assure residents we are doing all we can to resolve this. We will keep them informed every step of the way."
Now, whilst on the theme of health and science, as part of Green Libraries Month, Purton Library and Wild About Purton are hosting their annual science fair for all the family on Saturday the 10th of May from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Activities on the day include Medical Mavericks, fun workshops for children, Meet the Astronaut and Hold a Meteorite, STEMBotics, robot and coding workshops, Lancaster Bomber Flypast around 1:30 p.m. as part of the 80th anniversary of VE Day, ZooLab workshops, meet the animals and learn about them, learn about climate change with Staffordshire County Council and South Staffordshire Council, meet the Veolia team and take part in family activities, Lapworth Museum of Geology, Earth Stories, family-friendly pop-up cinema and nature crafts, author and illustrator Mark Bardsley signing his animal books and caricaturing pets, forensics activity with Staffordshire Police, meet the Staffordshire Wildlife Trust team, astronomy, telescopes and sunspots, waste savvy staffs, recycling talk, Wild About Purton, River and Lake Survey, explore their catch of the day, Bumblebee Conservation Trust, meet the flood risk team at Staffordshire County Council, Sue Ball, Libraries and Arts Manager at Staffordshire County Council, said, "We're thrilled to be able to host another science fair at Purton Library. This is always a fantastic event and a great example of how important our libraries are for bringing communities together. The team have worked incredibly hard with the community and partners to organise such a great lineup of activities. It's guaranteed to be a great day of family fun while learning about science, engineering, technology, and raising awareness of climate change issues. I hope people are able to visit on the day. Some of the activities need to be booked, and people should contact the library on 01902 506 050 or email purton.library@staffordshire.gov.uk.
And conservation is something that residents of the Black Country have been taking up in bucket loads. Actually, more so water butt loads. As 7 Trent customers across the West Midlands could catch almost 500,000 litres of rainwater a year by taking up free water butts. 7 Trent customers in Birmingham and the Black Country could capture over 140,000 litres of rainwater after taking up a free water butt. And with some long overdue rain in the forecast this week, 7 Trent is encouraging people to make use of them by reusing rainwater in their gardens. Since June 2024, 7 Trent teams have been going door to door, encouraging customers to take a free water butt to help them save on their water usage and money on their water bills. The 200 litre water butts are provided and installed free of charge, with over 9,500 snapped up by customers, well ahead of the company's original target of 8,000, with 700 installed at properties in the area. This equates to 140,000 litres of storage capacity. 7 Trent has been proactively offering the free water butts to customers who live in areas that can be badly affected by storms. As water butts hold rainwater instead of letting it run into the sewer, effectively adding capacity to the network, they can help reduce the use of storm overflows. Water butts collect and store rainwater, offering an environmentally friendly way to keep gardens healthy during drier months. It's also much more efficient than using a hose or sprinkler, which can use 1,000 litres of water per hour. Following the success of the first phase, the water company is planning to roll out a second phase of this programme in the summer, but is encouraging customers to get one fitted no matter the size of their garden. Matt Lewis, who is leading the installation programme from 7 Trent, said, "Using a water butt and a watering can keep plants well fed during the summer, and with rain forecast for later this week, this is the perfect time to get a water butt installed. We've seen a really fantastic response from customers to this project, some of whom have taken multiple water butts. By being mindful about the way we use water, we can all make sure that there's plenty available for everyone when they need it, which can be really helpful if we have a hot summer this year. We're really pleased that so many people have accepted a free water butt as part of this programme, and we're hopeful that we'll be able to offer more later this year." The water butts being offered by 7 Trent also include a system which allows some of the collected rainwater to be released slowly back to the environment. This can help during periods of heavy rain when the volume of rain can exceed the capacity of the sewer network, which in some instances can lead to sewage spills into local watercourses. This is just one part of 7 Trent's ongoing spills reduction programme, which has seen interventions ranging from upgrading pipes and valves to installing nature-based solutions such as reed beds and creating new stormwater storage tanks installed at over 1,500 locations. Matt continued, "While it may not seem like much, the extra capacity offered by a water butt can play a really important role in helping to address the ongoing challenges from climate change and a growing population, and help us to meet our targets to drastically reduce the use of storm overflows and encourage people to reuse water in different ways." For water saving tips and advice, visit stwater.co.uk and search for Saving Water Made Simple.
And flowers left in tribute to Queen Elizabeth II have been laid down as compost at a borough memorial garden. Dudley Council invited residents to leave floral tributes at sites including Mary Stevens Park in Stourbridge and Coronation Gardens in Dudley Town Centre when the popular monarch passed away in September 2022. Green care staff collected in the hundreds of bouquets and instead of just throwing them away, turned them into compost. That compost has now been laid in Coronation Gardens in Sedgley, to tie in with the anniversary of what would have been the Queen's 99th birthday. Councillor Damien Caulfield, Cabinet Member for Highways and Environmental Services, said, "When we lost Her Majesty the Queen, we set up memorial sites across the borough where residents could leave flowers. We didn't dispose of those flowers. Our operatives took them away. They composted them, and now to tie in with what would have been the Queen's birthday, we have laid it around Coronation Gardens in Sedgley. We will be planting there to create eye-catching new floral displays, and it comes after we planted a tree there to mark the coronation of King Charles. We want to create a memorial garden which residents can come and enjoy and cherish."
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition.
Hello, and welcome to your regular quiz section. My name is Anne, and I have 5 short questions for you. I hope you're ready. So here we go with the first question. Who was the ancient Greek god of the sun? Question 2. What was the name of the crime boss who was head of the feared Chicago outfit? Question 3. What year was the United Nations established? Question 4. Who has won the most Academy Awards? And question 5. How many minutes are there in a full week? And that's all for this quiz. I'll speak to you again soon when I bring you the answers.
I'll get my mind working on them. Now then, up next, with thanks to Soundly's contributors, Heather and Alistair, we've got a quick guide on what you can expect if you're visually impaired and plan to vote in this week's local elections. Don't forget your photo ID.
This is Alistair Hutton with an article written by Heather. Election Day this year falls on Thursday, the 1st of May, when many areas of England will be voting for local councillors or directly elected mayors. This year, there are local elections in 14 county councils, 8 unitary councils, and the Isles of Scilly. Doncaster has elections for both local councillors and a regional mayor. Further 5 areas are also electing regional mayors, and there's one parliamentary by-election in Runcorn and Helsby on the same day. This article outlines the areas holding elections and some of the adjustments that visually impaired voters can expect at polling stations. And don't forget that if you plan to vote in person, you now have to take photo ID with you to the polling station to prove your identity. Without photo ID, you won't be able to vote, following a change in the law in 2023 designed to prevent voter fraud. Let's look first at the areas holding elections. The 14 county council elections are being held in Cambridgeshire, Derbyshire, Devon, Gloucestershire, Hertfordshire, Kent, Lancashire, Leicestershire, Lincolnshire, Nottinghamshire, Oxfordshire, Staffordshire, Warwickshire, and Worcestershire. The 8 unitary councils with elections are Buckinghamshire, Cornwall, County Durham, North Northamptonshire, Northumberland, Shropshire, West Northamptonshire, and Wiltshire. Regional mayors will be elected for Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, Greater Lincolnshire, Hull, and East Yorkshire, North Tyneside and West of England. Doncaster, as explained earlier, is electing a mayor and local councillors. Further 9 areas have had their local elections delayed until next year while discussions are underway about local government reorganisation. That means if you live in East or West Sussex, Essex, Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, Norfolk, Suffolk, Surrey or Thurrock, you'll have to wait another year to choose your local councillors. To prove your identity to polling station staff before you vote, you have a number of options. The most commonly used ID documents include your passport, a driving license or blue badge, an older person's or a disabled person's bus pass, and if you have one of these, but it's out of date, you may still be able to use it to vote, as long as you are recognisable in the photo. If you don't have suitable photo ID, you can apply for a free voter authority certificate, but time is running out to get one for this year's elections. As long as you're registered to vote, you can contact your local authority to apply for a voter authority certificate. When you get to the polling station, election staff are required to make provisions for visually impaired and disabled people so that they can vote independently. All polling stations are required to have a range of options to assist blind and partially sighted voters, such as a tactile voting device. This is often a plastic overlay for the ballot papers. It will have flaps corresponding to the different candidates to help visually impaired voters mark their cross in the correct box. A large print copy of the ballot paper for reference, magnifiers to help read the ballot papers, additional lighting, and assistance from polling station staff to be guided to the voting booth and to mark your vote if needed. Election staff are also required to anticipate what is needed in their area to help voters and can provide additional equipment, such as an audio tactile device. At present, audio devices are often at the discretion of local staff, although it is possible to contact local election officers in advance to request an audio option.
Up next, let's have another Beacon update.
If you need help with sight loss, then filter glasses might help you. Filter glasses are a range of glasses specially for sight loss, designed to protect your eyes from harmful UV rays and reduce glare and bright light, and also improve contrast as well. They make things clearer to see and your eyes more comfortable. They can either be worn on their own, or you can wear them over your existing prescription glasses. Wearing a sun hat or a baseball cap or a sun visor can also help too. So if you'd like to try the range of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life a bit more comfortable for you, then call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. You can call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor.
Next up, we have another block of local news.
Veterans of the Armed Forces in Wolverhampton are being invited to join a monthly social club. The Wolverhampton Armed Forces and Veterans Breakfast Club in Bilston gives people the chance to meet other former personnel and tackle loneliness, Councillor Craig Collingswood said. He attended a recent meeting at the Bankfield Inn, where the group gathers at 9:30 on the last Saturday of each month, and described it as a brilliant initiative. The ethos of the club, set up in 2019, is mutual support and membership is free, with veterans just paying for their breakfast, the council says. It offers veterans and serving members the chance to enjoy the company of other armed forces personnel, past and present. It helps to combat loneliness and enables veterans to return to the tribe. Collingwood, chair of Wolverhampton's Armed Forces Covenant Partnership Board, said. The club also meets socially for regimental and association dinners, nights out, barbecues, parties, and Christmas events. Currently, veterans could also travel for free on buses and get discounted rail travel for up to 6 months as part of a scheme by Network West Midlands, the council said.
And families across Staffordshire are also being invited to a series of activities at the county's libraries to celebrate the 80th anniversary of VE Day. Victory in Europe Day on Thursday, May the 8th, marks 80 years since the unconditional surrender of Nazi Germany, a moment of relief and celebration across Britain and allied nations. To mark the event, visitors can enjoy historic talks, crafts and creative writing sessions, exhibits and even a flypast of a Lancaster bomber. Taking place at Cannock Library on Wednesday, April the 30th, A Family at War is a free talk about World War II and VE Day by Andrew Lound. The talk will run from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. and tells the story of the Waite family and their experiences during the war in the Home Guard, the Army, the RAF and the Royal Navy. Visitors to Purton Library on Saturday, May the 10th, can see a flypast of Lancaster B1 PA-474. The bomber, part of the Battle of Britain Memorial Flight, is one of the only two remaining airworthy Lancaster bombers out of the 7,377 that were built. The flypast is due around 1:30 p.m. Sue Ball, Libraries and Arts Manager at Staffordshire County Council, said, "It's great that our libraries are joining in the celebrations with a whole host of family activities and entertainment. This is a significant anniversary that marks the end of World War II in Europe and an opportunity to remember the courage of those who fought and died for our freedom. I do hope people are able to visit their local library and join in the celebrations." At Stone Library on Thursday, May the 8th at 2:30 p.m, people can join the Make Do Amend talk from Kath Reynolds. She will be delivering a talk on life during the Second World War, including a discussion on eating chitterlings, pig's trotters, tripe, and even how to use a bit of beetroot to enhance lipstick. The event is free, but booking is required. People are being invited to share photos of their celebrations on the VE and VJ Day webpage and across social media using the hashtag VE80 hashtag. Further details are available on the library's Plans for VE Day Celebrations webpage or on their social media pages.
Across in Shropshire, and a local historian has detailed how a market town in the county celebrated the end of war in Europe on May the 8th, 80 years ago. Local historian and author Clive Gwilt has detailed just how Bridgnorth, which had been hit by a dozen bombs during the war, celebrated the end of the conflict back in 1945 in a new book. In his Victory in Europe and Victory over Japan in Bridgnorth, Mr. Gwilt explains the feelings at the end of the war in the town. He said, "Bridgnorth had 275 bomb alerts during the war, and in August 1940, 12 bombs hit the area, killing two women in Cliff Cottages and Church Street. However, by the end of 1944, in Europe, thoughts turned from war to celebrating the return to peace." He said the Bridgnorth Town Council met to discuss suitable arrangements for VE Day. Celebrations were deliberately low-key as the war was not completely over and many families had lost loved ones, said Mr. Gwilt, adding that £100 was allocated to be spent on celebrations donated by the town councillors. He added, "On Tuesday, May the 8th, VE Day, Union Jacks and illuminations appeared in the High Street and a bonfire was lit on Pan Pudding Hill. Bell ringers pealed the church bells as Winston Churchill gave his victory speech on speakers supplied by Bridgnorth's RGD company in the High Street, and again later in the evening for services at the parish churches. The town band under Mr. Terry E. Briggs played at both High Town for 2 hours and Low Town, and locals danced to their music." Mr. Gwilt added that further events took place throughout the days, weeks and months following VE Day, including VJ Day, when World War II was finally declared over. Mr. Gwilt's book to mark the end of the Second World War in Bridgnorth is available at £4 from Urban Angel in the town centre, Bridgnorth Library, as well as Violet's Cafe. It can also be ordered direct from the author, clive.quilt@sky.com. Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. Well, spring has certainly been back with us, rocking some style with a sun hat and some sunshades on. Unfortunately, after such a glorious week of weather, where temperatures peaked at a remarkable 25 degrees, it does look as though things are set to become much more unsettled and temperatures will return back down to something more in line with what we would expect this time of year as we progress through this week. With the warmer months now here, we will continue to experience higher UV levels too, so do take the necessary precautions, as prolonged sunshine should see UV levels peak to high this week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:25 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:45 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, it is looking rather settled and quiet, but oh, so fabulous for the start of the week. From Friday 2nd to Sunday 4th of May, we're looking at the likelihood of unbroken sunshine from dawn right through until dusk. Pleasant and gentle breeze across the whole weekend. Temperatures should remain at something above what we would usually expect in May, averaging around 20 degrees and peaking as high as 22 degrees. So it does look like we are set for a wonderful weekend of weather ahead with plenty of sunshine. However, all will start to become more spring-like and rather unsettled from Monday 5th of May through to Thursday 8th of May, with a mix of drizzle, light rain showers, spells of sunshine, light winds and temperatures noticeably cooler at 15 degrees. It will begin to feel much more like spring again than summer. So, please do also remember, should you be experiencing any light sensitivity and discomfort from the bright sunny days, Beacon's team of sight loss advisors are able to provide advice, guidance, and demonstrations of low vision aids that may help make things much more comfortable for you. You can contact the sight loss advice team on 01902 880111, but please do also listen out for Pete in this week's edition, who will also be providing a lot more information about the support available. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Now it's time to find out how our local football teams have been getting on.
Hi guys, it's Wolves superfan Fraser here. I went to the Wolves v Leicester match on Saturday and we've had 5 wins in a row and boy, we were hoping for the 6th. Oh wow, did we get it? Kuna scored the opening goal and it came half time and we were 1-0 up and we were playing really well and boy, I couldn't wait for the next star. I ate my Greg's sausage roll at half time as I normally do and well, we dominated the second half and we had goals coming from Strand Larsen and Rodrigo Gomez. Kuna scored the first goal and he also created the 2. He had an amazing game. It was great to see Connor Cody was back at the Molyneux and I absolutely loved the way that the fans were chanting for him. The Foxes missed a penalty and we ended up winning 3-0! Woo! After the game, I went to stay the night with my godparents, Mary and Sean, and we went to the pub and they bought me a fish and chips with loads of vinegar to celebrate. Come on, me babies!
Hi, it's Jamie Walls, speaking about Walls. Difference between the first half of the season is night and day. So it's so much better than that of Gary O'Neill, where we were left wondering what the plan was and fearing relegation as a real possibility. Now we have 6 wins in a row, the best since 1970. Vitor Pereira has restored confidence in the team and we see what this team is capable of. So much more than Gary O'Neill would have us believe. Vitor says he does not want a relegation fight next season. By spending a little money, a little in the summer window, not a large amount of money that could put us into PSR trouble, how much better could he make this squad? So next season now looks an exciting prospect and fans reeled in once again. So Tyson, it's over to you in Vitor We Trust. I'll speak to you next week. Bye.
Now, here come the quiz
answers.
Hello again, and this is Anne, and I have the answers to your quiz section. The first question was, who was the ancient Greek god of the sun? And that is Apollo. Question 2 was, what was the name of the crime boss who was head of the feared Chicago outfit. He was Al Capone. Question 3. What year was the United Nations established? It was established in 1945. Question 4. Who has won the most Academy Awards? Well, that is Walt Disney. And question 5 was, how many minutes are there in a full week? But I hope you got your sums right, because the answer to this is 10,080. And that's all for this time. I'll speak to you again soon.
I think it's time for us all to enjoy a good old book review. The following book is available from Calibre, an organisation which provides a free service to visually impaired people. Extracts from the audiobook also come courtesy of Calibre. So, grab yourself a cuppa, find your comfy spot, and nestle down, as coming up next is a discussion and review.
This morning I have Debbie Heath in the studio with me. Welcome back indeed. So I have to thank you again for suggesting this book. Hamnet was wonderful, and probably, I think, I would suggest you listen to it with a hanky or a box of tissues nearby, because it's quite a heartbreaking story.
It is an emotional read, but I found it very easy to read. It's written in a very accessible way. And I have read another of Maggie O'Farrell's books. I hadn't been bowled over, actually, but I thought this was really, really good. I genuinely liked it and will be recommending it to lots of people. We should explain why it is worth listening to.
Absolutely, yes. It is. It's a story based in the 15th century. And I don't think there's any surprise or any plot spoilers to say that it is based around the life of Will Shakespeare and his wife, Agnes Hathaway, as she's called. And it tells the tale of their son, Hamnet. He's a twin to Judith. And they have another daughter.
Suzanne,
thank you. And it tells a tale, and it begins with Hamnet trying to find his mum. His sister has fallen ill. She's taken to her bed. And Hamlet is trying to find an adult to help.
Yeah, an adult, because they lived with their grandparents. I think they describe it as being a house that's always full of noise, and at a time when he actually needs those interfering adults, there is no one there.
Yeah.
I found that very, very touching opening, so desperate to protect his twin. I mean, that's another interesting theme, actually.
Yes.
Twins. Shakespeare used twins a lot in his plays.
Yes.
In different ways.
Exactly. In the interchange of the twins play a trick, don't they?
Yes, they do.
They pretend to be each other at various points, and it's become one of their childhood tricks that they do. One pretends to be the other, and that becomes quite a poignant theme.
Yes, there is a sad twist to this later on in the book.
So maybe we should chat about the characters of Agnes and her husband, who's always referred to as the husband,
yes,
or the tutor, or the son. He is never named
William.
Throughout the whole book, he is the unnamed character. Yeah,
so absolutely. It's a feminist novel, really. He is just not terribly important. The book is really about his absence.
It is.
Isn't it? As a husband, as a father, which I find really refreshing. As it started, it explained about her own childhood, didn't it?
It did.
Which I didn't enjoy that section as much. I found it a little bit hard going for the beginning of the book, but it was actually very necessary because it helped us to understand some of her odd choices, such as giving birth in a wood,
yes,
rather than with the help of a midwife. And when she tries the second time to give birth in a wood, you're actually really willing her on to go and do something which is actually very irresponsible, but she doesn't know that she's having twins.
It's very clever, isn't it? Because we first meet her, she's running through a wood and she's got a kestrel on her arm, and they think she's a boy at first. I mean, she looks like a man running through a wood, but until the husband, or the husband to be at that stage, looks further and isn't quite intrigued by her, and she's called a waif and a fairy and a witch and all various things, isn't she? Because she's very in touch with nature. In fact, and you know, Agnes can feel when people are not well, or feel attitudes around people, which is quite fascinating in itself. And as you say, I think the book is essentially about her.
So let's listen to an extract from the audiobook describing how Agnes is viewed by her fellow villagers.
She has a certain notoriety in these parts. It is said that she is strange, touched, peculiar, perhaps mad. He has heard that she wanders the back roads and forest at will, unaccompanied, collecting plants to make dubious potions. It is not wise to cross her, for people say she learnt her crafts from an old crone who used to make medicines and spin, and could kill a baby with a single glance. It is said that the stepmother lives in terror of the girl putting hexes on her, especially now the yeoman is dead. Her father must have loved her, though, because he left her a sizeable dowry in his will. Not that anyone, of course, would want to wed her. She is said to be too wild for any man. Her mother, God rest her soul, had been a gypsy, or a sorceress, or a forest sprite. The tutor has heard many of these fanciful tales about her. His own mother shakes her head and tuts when this girl comes up in conversation.
There's an interesting passage in the book. We were talking about bubonic plague, and both of the twins managed to catch bubonic plague. And there's a wonderful passage, and I think it's chapter 11, where O'Farrell describes how a flea, and it's in such great detail. And
yeah,
such
you don't realise that's what it is to start you?
Yes.
It starts off talking about a Manx sailing boy, cabin boy, who meets a monkey, and you think, oh, right, she's gone completely off on a tangent here. This is going to be a really important character. And, I mean, in a way, it is.
Yes, very important, yeah.
Because of what happens next. Yeah, it's just so well drawn. You can visualise it, can't you?
Yes, absolutely. I was like you. When I started reading that passage, I thought,
what?
This is odd. This is very odd. I could listen to it, and I was thinking, where is this going? And then it started to fall in place. And these minute actions of these, as you say, minor characters really, really put it home, because this is what happens. This is how the bubonic plague gets into the country. And I think it's especially sort of poignant with us having gone through COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, I thought the same thing.
Let's have an extract from chapter 11, where we can trace the journey of the flea.
One of these fleas falls unseen to the ground, where the boy will unwittingly crush it with the sole of his foot. The second stays for a while in the sandy hair of the boy, making its way to the front of his crown. When he is paying for a flagon of the local brew in the tavern, it will make a leap, an agile, arching spring, from the forehead to the shoulder of the innkeeper. The third of the monkey's fleas will remain where it fell, in the fold of the red cloth tied around the boy's neck, given to him by his sweetheart at home. Later, when the boy has returned to the ship for the night, having eaten a dinner of some of the spiced nuts and a curious patty of bread shaped like a pancake, he will pick up his favourite of the ship's cats, an animal mostly white, but with a striped tail, and nuzzle it against his neck. The flea, alert to the presence of a new host, will transfer itself from the boy's neckerchief to the thick, milk-white fur of the cat's neck.
What did you think of the language? It's very sensual, this book, isn't it? There's lots of description of smells and
yes, and I really like that. The smell thing. It's a real nature lover's book. It's an animal lover's book.
Yes.
And it's all part and parcel of that. There's a beautiful piece of imagery. What was it? Kittens with faces like pansies. And I thought, yes, absolutely. A long-haired kitten's face is like a pansy.
Yes, you're right. There are lots of references to animals, to flowers, to trees. And it's very sensual, very rich in that sense. Let's listen to the audiobook for a great example of this.
The bracelet, she realises, has something bad coming off it, like steam. It was too cold at first, gripping her skin with an icy, indifferent embrace. Now, though, it is too hot, too tight. Its single red eye glowers up at her with baleful intent. Someone unhappy she knows has worn it, someone who dislikes her or resents her. It is steeped in bad luck, bad feeling, polished with it to a dull lustre. Whoever it used to belong to wishes her harm. Eliza sits, smiling now as she finishes speaking. Agnes looks at her husband, and suddenly she sees it, feels it, senses it, all over his body, all over his skin, his hair, his face, his hands, as if an animal has run over him again and again, leaving tiny paw marks. He is, Agnes realizes, covered in the touches of other women. She looks down at her plate, at her own hands, her own fingers, at their roughened tips, at the walls and loops of her fingerprints, at the knuckles and scars and veins of them, at the nails she cannot stop herself gnawing the minute they emerge.
So, our three reasons for suggesting or recommending this audiobook.
Historically, it's interesting, isn't it? Mm. It takes a historical figure and looks at him from a completely different viewpoint. And yes. I think that's really interesting. And it's enlightening, it's refreshing. I think that would be my first reason.
Second one?
Well, I think we've touched on her use of language. She's such a good wordsmith all the way through for the reasons we've discussed, the imagery involving your senses, the way she creates her characters, minor and major. She really is a master of her craft.
I would agree with that. And your third?
I don't want to put male readers off, but it is a really interesting piece of feminist literature. Mm. I don't think it can only be fully appreciated by women, don't get me wrong, but I think it might resonate with women more. But I think everyone who has some interest in that period of history in Shakespeare or has gone through child loss and is feeling strong enough to listen to that or has an interest in the supernatural, animals, nature, it appeals actually to such a wide range of people.
Yeah. I think my three, and I, yeah. I would agree with language, and as you said, it's essential and it's quite visceral. And I think I said it while we were chatting. I think it's a timeless sort of portrait of loss and grief, and it could happen at any time. I like the fact that it needn't to be set in the 15th century. It could be set in the future. It still resonates. And I think it's got real emotional intelligence, and it's sad without being sentimental. And
yes, you're right. It's not mawkish in any way.
No. And it's not. And if I put people off by saying, get a hanky or a box of tissues, I meant that in the best possible way, because it is an uplifting book. I think it is sad, but then there are passages of joy as well.
So yes, absolutely.
I think for that reason, to manage to do that without being sentimental or mawkish or morbid, mm-hmm. is a real, real skill. Huge thanks to Debbie Heath there. Just as a reminder, Calibre Audio offer completely free access to a wide range of audiobooks, including Hamnet. For further info, you can get in touch by phoning 01296 432 339 or emailing inquiries@calibre.org.uk.
DNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who, without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. Please note, the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!